Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. And this is Ashland Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 214. It's the week of October 26th, 2015. And I'd like to thank you for coming along, coming back if you're a returning listener. Welcome if you're a brand new listener. This episode is going to be called Where's Ashland Dave? Because I've been absent for a while. I do realize that. And I think I lost a bunch of listeners who've moved on to some other things. But if you have come back, that means that you're a loyal listener, and I appreciate that more than you know. Yeah, you know, I started this podcast back in 2008, not to be popular or anything like that, but just to kind of hold myself accountable as I was embarking on some distance goals. And I had listened to other running podcasts, and I thought it was a neat idea. And there was this one guy named Steve Runner who was encouraging people to try it themselves. So I did, and it didn't take long before I started meeting lots of different types of people. But I still kind of stayed to my roots there with keeping myself accountable with training and distance running to try to achieve goals for my ability level. And I'm pleased to say that that is still the reason for the podcast, and that's why I really have no problem coming back 2 months later and saying, hey, I'm back, and I've got another show out. So this show is going to be called Where's Ashland Dave? So I'll be talking a little bit about what I've been doing over the last couple months, specifically the last month, because I've been very pleased with my progress and my training. I'll talk about that here in a few minutes. But I got to say, really, the biggest reason why I was absent is I was voted the world's best dad, number one dad. So I've been really busy with that. And, you know, when your kid tells you that you're, you know, world's number one dad, you know, you got a lot of work to do. You can't just sit around recording podcasts, you know, every week. You got to go out and do other stuff with your kid. And I will say that this happened to me when I took my daughter camping about a week and a half ago to Westmoreland State Park, which is in the northern neck of Virginia. We had just a great weekend. We went hiking along the Potomac River, you know, set up our camp, braved the cold, you know, made a campfire, and just had a great time. And we got these great lanterns that really light up the tent. So essentially when you get up in the tent, and I got a really big tent. It's got plenty of room. There's, you know, living room furniture in there and everything. It's really just kind of like hanging out in your living room, and it's just a really good time. And if it wasn't just so cold, you know, it would have been a lot better hanging around because you don't have to have so many layers on. However, I'd rather have the cold over the rain any day. And so that's Westmoreland State Park. Very clean. Everything was very clean. The trails were well marked, and we kind of did a perimeter hike around the park, with the highlight being along the Potomac River. And I really had no idea how wide the Potomac River was up in the northern neck of Virginia. And when I say the northern neck of Virginia, what I'm referring to is it's a peninsula, and there's the northern neck, there's the middle peninsula, and then there's like the lower area that's not really you don't call it the lower peninsula, it's kind of called the tidewater area. So the middle peninsula is not really it's kind of hard to explain, but the northern neck is kind of like a neck of land that sticks out into the Chesapeake Bay with the kind of the Potomac River up along the north. And it was so windy that the actual river had waves breaking onto this little beach area called Fossil Beach. So we had a great time. And the reason we went alone is because this past weekend was the fall trip for the Dads and Daughters group that I'm a part of. And if you've listened to the show, you've heard me talk about how we use an acronym, DADA, that was much better than the acronym Fathers and Girls. But anyway, we were a Confederate Indian Princess group that broke away from the YMCA. And you've heard me say before, the YMCA is kind of big in this area. There's lots of programming there, and it's a great facility for family events. And the group I was with was a little more rambunctious, I guess you could say, than some of the other groups. And some of the guys wanted to break away and form their own kind of Dads and Daughters Club. We still did these outside activities, and we kind of did organize stuff with your daughter. And I joined that group, and so we became the Dads and Daughters of Ashland. DADA, DADA group is kind of what we call it here locally. And we continue to do camping trips twice a year, you know, canoeing, shooting BB guns, making fires, outdoor stuff. You know, everything you teach your son, but you teach that to your daughter. And we've had some great times. And a lot of these girls, even though now they technically would be aging out of the Indian Princess group, we continue to do these trips, even with the girls as teenagers. And I will admit that it kind of morphed into some trips where, you know, the dads were sitting around the fire and some of the girls were out, you know, hanging out in each other's tents and you know, doing girly stuff. But the activities during the day were, you know, dads and you know, you're engaged with your daughter, and they were a lot of fun. And so my daughter, whose name is Lucy, she wanted to keep doing this, even though we were going to miss the group trip because of she had a high school activity, and I'm working a side job that I had to work. She wanted to go anyway. She didn't want to miss the fall trip, and so we decided to go by ourselves, and we had a great time. And that was actually the first time I've ever been, you know, just on a camping trip with my daughter, just the two of us. And it worked out great. You know, through this group, I've learned how to cook on a stove, you know, do a lot of stuff out at a campsite that I probably wouldn't have known how to do it just by myself. You know, I guess I could read books, and I would have figured things out. But, you know, you have security in a group, and over the years, you know, we all took turns, and you have to bring food, and you got to know how to cook out on a camping stove and how to pack stuff and how to get things fired up in the morning. We always had coffee. That was one thing I missed this time. I didn't bring coffee. But that's where I was told I was the world's number one dad, and so I've been really, really busy, and of course, that kind of had to kind of, that went backwards a whole lot with, you know, keeping, there's a whole lot of stuff building up to that, so that's really why I haven't been around the podcast. And so the question of where's Ashley and Dave is, I've really been here the whole time, and it's just, you know, like I said before, getting out the podcast, you have to have a quiet house, kind of like I have right now. And you got to have something to talk about. So now I've got stuff to talk about. So yeah, let's talk about the last month. Really, really excited about the potential for the Mississippi Trail 50, which is on March 5th of 2016. That was the big announcement in the last, I think that was the last show, number 213. And all I really needed was just to sign up for some BHAG, what they call that, a big hairy ass goal, to get me out there, getting some miles down and enjoying the activity again. And so what I did is I've been building up. I just started small again and get the motivate, try to get some mojo back. I got it back. And for the last month, I've been running 25 miles a week. So I think I'm now, I'm gonna drop back a little bit this weekend, mainly because it's raining today and I didn't feel like going running after I got home from work. And I sat in a class all day. That's another thing, if you're new to the show, I go off on these major tangents, and sometimes I'm able to bring myself back, but I'm not sure if I always do. I sat in a class today. Normally my job is pretty fast-paced. I work in public service, and I get to work, and things really roll along pretty quick over the course of the day, and there are some days where I look up, and I can't believe it's lunchtime, or I can't believe you know, the day's over, whatever. Well, when you sit in a class all day, if you know, everybody knows, if you've ever sat in a class, you know, that time goes by a lot slower. And I tell you, another way to make time go by slow is to run long distances. That really makes the time go by slow too. But so I sat in this class all day, and it was supposed to go to 4:30, and it finished up a few minutes early because we worked right through lunch, which we got a free lunch out of it, but then we had to listen to this presentation during lunch. I wasn't too pleased with that because I had some regular work to do. Well, you know, around 2:30, my head's bobbing, and I was kind of falling asleep, and I felt really bad, and I'm thinking, how am I going to get motivated when I get home to go running? And really, it was probably the best thing I should have done today. However, when I got out of work, it was kind of been raining all day, just kind of crappy out, and I've got to pick my daughter up from school, and I forgot that we did this fundraiser to raise some funds for this activity she's involved with at school. And today we got to pick up all that stuff and then distribute it over the next couple days. And so the thought of coming home, trying to get some miles in, you know, get in the car, pick her up. And then on top of all that, I'm the carpool guy today. So I got to take two other kids home on the way back. And I just decided today's a really good day to bag the training run. So this will be a fallback week. And plus, I needed the extra day. I did 11 on Saturday and 5 on Sunday. I made up for 25 for the whole week. And Just, you know, I really needed that. So that's what I'm doing now is I'm doing the double long. Well, I'm not really up to a long run on Sunday, but I'll be getting close to that. Won't be long before I'm doing double digits on both days. And that's where you really need that that extra rest day on Monday. And then sometimes I'll need it on Tuesday, a day like today. I'm still feeling a little bit. I think maybe it's probably a good thing I'm not going running, but I'll definitely be ready for tomorrow. And I'll talk about tomorrow here in a little bit when I get to the email bag section of the show, because we have a visit from Sandy. Sandy is coming to the center of the universe, and I'll have to get some sound bites from that for the next show. So that's where I'm at. I'm ready to make a leap up to 30 miles. And if you've listened to the show before, and I hate to keep saying that, but I do have a new listener that has hopefully picked up and will listen to the show on a regular basis. I want to get my mileage up to very close to 50 miles for at least a couple weeks when I peak, and that will pretty much be all I can handle before to train for the 50 miler in March, because at that point in time my body really does start to break. That's been my experience over the last several. I've done 350 milers and 100K. Those are the longest ones I've ever done, and I can just tell that. I can tell, you know, when I've done 50 miles, I'm hurting so bad. I'm wondering if I even am, if I really am injured. Somehow I recover from that and I'm able to do the event. And I'm going to get to an article here towards the end of the show that kind of ticked me off a little bit, because I do this podcast all from the perspective of my ability level. I've never thought of myself as anything spectacular whatsoever. And I do consider myself a marathoner. I've done 28 marathons, even though I've been locked out of the Marathon Maniacs page and I can't go in there and look at my spreadsheet. But so you would call me a marathoner, right? I've done some ultra marathons, so I'm, I guess, an ultra marathoner too, right? Well, there's an article I saw that got passed around or something that this guy says that because you've done a marathon, you're not a marathoner. So I'll get to that in the show. It's going to be towards the end. I've got a list of stuff here in my stack of stuff that I want to kind of talk about. So I just want to talk a little bit about the state of the podcast. If you're a returning listener, and obviously you've seen that I haven't had a show out in a while, I've just been so incredibly busy over the last couple months. I just haven't had time to produce a podcast. And that's really and the fact that I'm the world's number one dad, and I just had a whole lot of work to do for that, are really the biggest reasons. But I'm still back with the podcast. I love interacting with listeners through email, and you can always reach me at ashlanddave@gmail.com. I encourage you to use that if you want to send me an email. I will get back to you. I've said before, just might not always be right away. I can't really have an immediate dialogue with everybody. However, since Father's Day, I am now in the world of wireless devices that access the internet. So a whole new world has opened up to me, which is really fun. And I have to kind of take back some of what I said about in that episode, some things that I've learned, because now I see what I've been missing. But I'm still trying to keep it in check, because I still think it's weird when you see people just killing time with their device out all the time, you know, when they could be doing something else. So I still think that's kind of weird. So the state of the podcast is good. 214 episodes. This is number 214. It started with a real cruddy one back in 2008. I think I've improved quite a bit. I've met lots of people online in this virtual running community, which is just an outstanding group of people that I've communicated with over the years. It's lots of inspiration. And I've only had one complaint over the years, and that was one guy that whined because I didn't email him back and didn't mention his email on the podcast. And I tried to tell him, like, hey, dude, I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm just an amateur runner. If you wouldn't even call me that, I'm an ordinary middle-of-the-pack nobody. That's what I've said constantly before. I'm hardly, anything spectacular. I go out there and just hack my way through half marathons, marathons, and some 50Ks, and I've been fortunate enough to do 350 milers and 100K. But it was hard, and at some point in time, I almost felt like I wasn't going to be able to do it. So, spare me the whining because you didn't get an email back from me. I'm Ashland Dave, and I live in a small town in Central Virginia, and I hardly think that an email from me is going to really do much for anybody, but maybe was that really that important? And I can't believe it went off on that tangent, because maybe that guy still listens to the show. I don't remember what his name is, but it doesn't really matter that much. So let's get into a couple things here. I cannot even read my own writing right here. Let's see. I'm going to have to pause the show. Okay, I'm back. I also realize that I say and ah a lot, but you just have to kind of bear with me on that. All right, as you know, sometimes I do the show script-free, other times I don't, and then sometimes I just do it by making some notes. And so I got a stack of notes here, and I want to talk a little bit about being a reference. This has nothing to do with running. I got plenty of running stuff to talk about, but that'll be a little bit later in the show. I want to talk a little bit about being a reference for somebody. I'm at that point in my life now. I've had a successful career, and I'm kind of locally well known, I guess, within my field. I like to say locally famous. This is separate from the podcast. You know, whenever you work somewhere for over 20 years, you're going to know a lot of people. All right, so I was asked to be a reference, I've been asked to be a reference over the years for some different things, and I'm going to cite just three things here, and you're going to get a kick out of this, because they've been, all have been kind of, except for one, have been colossal failures, and the reason I point this out is because just because you're asked to be a reference for somebody, really the only person that feels good about that is you, because your ego is being stroked. It doesn't mean that that means that person thinks that you're kind of squared away. It doesn't mean you're going to get him a job or anything like that. I've just learned that all it really does is stroke your own ego. So let me give you a couple examples here. And the one I'm going to start with was from a few years ago. We had a babysitter back when my child was much younger. I guess it was more than just a few years ago. And this particular person was very trustworthy. We totally trusted her. She house sat for us. This was back when she was in high school. She was an artist and a very talented artist. We went to some of her art shows. When we had dogs, we would go on trips or whatever, and we would, instead of boarding the dogs, she would come sit at our house and play with our dog. And I guess some of those times we had two dogs, Basil and Otis, and then when Otis died, we had Blue and Basil. We never had any fear that she would, have people over or anything like that, because we knew the family and we'd seen this young lady grow up, and so we had a lot of trust for her. Well, during the course of knowing her, she got a job as a counselor for one of the county parks and rec camps during the course of the summer, and she did that for two summers, and then The third summer, I guess she was eligible to be a supervisor. She contacted me and asked me to be a reference for her. So I was obviously, flattered, and I knew the director of Parks and Rec, and I for Hanover County, and I just thought that, you give me your letter, I will personally deliver it over there. And I'm laughing about this now, because it's so funny, because it just didn't go anywhere. The whole thing, she didn't even get the job. I'm not even sure if they even paid any attention to me being a reference for her, and turned out she ended up doing the same position again, and she didn't get the supervisor's job. And maybe she messed up the interview. I don't know. I would hope to, I would like to think that it wasn't me. I wasn't the reason, but you don't really ever know. So let me go to the second one. So the second one is something that happened more recent. These last two are something that happened a lot more recent, and I really have to kind of mask the identity and the nature of these jobs here, so nobody out there knows who I'm talking about, because some of this stuff might still be pending a little bit. So a couple months ago, I get asked by an attorney friend of mine this would be good. I have several friends that are attorneys. I'm not an attorney, and most of y'all know what I do, but I'm certainly not a lawyer. But I have lots of attorney friends, professional friends. I guess you could say I know a few of them outside of work, but most of them, I guess you could say, they're professional friends. Well, one of them contacted me and asked me if I'd be a reference for him. And so, and this is an attorney in a kind of a prominent position. And so obviously I was very flattered again. My ego was stroked, and I'm thinking, gosh, this person, looks at me like that. And it was really cool. So I found out where this person was applying for a job, and it turns out that I know an attorney in that actual section where he was applying for a job. So I said, hey man, I will call up my buddy Frank and tell him that I know you, so when you get called in for an interview, you can make that connection. And you know, sometimes that's how people get hired. There's that extra personal connection there. So I called my buddy Frank. I said, hey, Bubba's applied for this position, and I know him, and he does well, and we think highly of him, and we'd hate to lose him, and all that stuff. And all of it was true. None of it was bullshitting or anything like that. And so Frank looked up his list of applicants or whatever, and he said, oh yeah, I'll definitely call Bubba in for an interview, and he looks like, well, he would qualify, so you know, we'll definitely call him in. So they also gave me some other ideas of what might come up in the interview. You see how this works? He didn't cheat. He just kind of said, hey, well, you might tell your friend that the position is really heavy on, you know, 1, 2, 3, ABC, and, you know, that's what we're going to be asking about, some in the interview. So I'm thinking, let me go back and call my buddy Bubba and say, hey, man, I got some hot information. This is really what the position is all about, if you don't know. And if you go into the interview, it might be helpful if you know some of this stuff. And would you believe that whoops. I almost said the F word. Actually, I think I did say the F word. Sorry about that. If I think about it, I'll go back and bleep it. But would you believe that guy never called me back about any of that information? Not even sure if he got the message. And then here's the kicker. A couple weeks after that, I get a call from my buddy Frank, who says that Bubba never showed up for his freaking interview. Now, how do you, that was embarrassing to me. And I just told Frank, I said, man, I don't know what to say. I said, that's embarrassing that I kind of, quote, vouch for this guy. And then he didn't even show up for the interview. And this is the part that kind of bothers me the most, is I've seen this guy several times now, never said a word about it. So, what do you do ethically? And I think I'm going to eventually talk to him about it, because it was kind of embarrassing. And I certainly don't want him to use me as a reference again, because, what am I supposed to say? Do I lie to the next person? I don't know. All right, so I don't know. Maybe people out there that are listening to this don't think that's funny, but I don't know. Email me if you've ever had a similar situation like that. I'd be interested to know, ashlanddave@gmail.com. Let me know if you don't want me to read it on the podcast. As always, I always throw that out there. So the last one is a local friend of mine has a child who is at the age where this child can apply to be a page in the Virginia General Assembly, which is the state legislature here. It's called the General Assembly. There's a Senate, and then there's a House of Delegates. And I was asked to serve as a reference for this person for a position. He's applying at the for a Senate page and a delegate page position. And each house had their own procedure. For example, if the application for this, I went on the website to figure it all out before I wrote any kind of reference letter. For the Senate page application, the person who was serving as a reference had to write a letter to the majority leader. So I did that. My first time I've ever written a letter to a state senator. And then for the delegate side, they had to get the endorsement of their delegate. So I personally know our delegate for this area. So I called him up and I said, hey man, I got this this young fella who's a great kid, and I was happy to, but I couldn't write a letter to the delegate. But I was able to kind of grease some wheels and get him an interview real good. And so I'm really hoping that he gets one of these positions. And I would prefer that he get the delegate position because, again, I personally know the delegate. But I've learned that doesn't really mean much, because it doesn't really matter. What if there's like five people that are like that, and he's got to pick one of those. So it's just been an interesting experience here in reference to references, and I thought I would share some of that in the podcast that has absolutely nothing to do with running. But nevertheless, we're here to talk about everything. Mostly running is what I prefer, but sometimes I do go on these big, huge tangents. So I got two other things to talk about before I get to this article that really ticked me off. So we have this has nothing to do with running, but then the next item kind of does, because it's about the Capitol Trail that finally got finished. There's a company that we've used over the years to sweep our chimney. We have a wood fireplace that we use, not to heat the house. It's just really more for ambiance. And so we have wood delivered. We stack it. We go through quite a bit. And we generally have a fire probably just about every other night, from like 6 o'clock in the evening until probably 10 o'clock at night, and then it burns itself out. So, you know, the proper chimney care is you got to get it swept. And we use this one company called Neat Sweep that we've used for the years, for several years. When we used to live in an old farmhouse type of house that had a wood stove, that we use that at pretty much every day in the winter, and really burned a lot of wood through that. And so it was the same company. The only problem with the company is that they tend to try to telemarket you when you don't want it. In other words, they're in the off season, they're really constantly contacting you to try to come out and get some work. And we ignore their calls. We got them on the caller ID, so we know when they're calling. And then we just, I hate telemarketing. I don't care who's calling. I absolutely hate it. But anyway, so we need to get our chimney swept for this season. This was early October that we called. Not really fireplace season yet because it wasn't even cold yet. But we wanted to kind of get things all ready to go for this year. We didn't do it over the summer. We said, oh, we'll do it in the fall. So my wife Monica called up the company and to schedule a time. And they said that they are not scheduling anything more than 2 weeks out. And so we thought, well, that's kind of weird. I mean, doesn't your calendar go out more than 2 weeks? And so they would not even take our request for an appointment longer than 2 weeks out. So I don't know what would happen if we called the next day. Does that mean is it rotating? Does it mean it still goes 2 weeks out, or can we get one in? So they said they're not, they're all booked, but they're not scheduling for more than 2 weeks out, and they didn't have anything available. And I just got to thinking, well, what isn't that the? I didn't understand that. I don't understand what that business model. Maybe I'm missing something. So clearly we're going to call another company. We're not even going to go with them because they won't even take our business. I would think, though, that if they were booked for the next 2 weeks, they would say, yes, Ashlyn, Dave, we will schedule you for 15 days from now because tomorrow is 2 weeks out. But that didn't happen, so we're clearly going to go with another company, and here it is October 26th or 27th. And we have not done that yet, so I have to get on the wife to do that. She's kind of the chimney sweeper person. Anyway, I just thought that was an interesting business model to share. I just don't quite understand why, what's the point in that? Last thing before we get to this article that ticked me off: Capitol Trail. The Capitol Trail is a recreational path that is now finished from downtown Richmond along Canal Walk all the way to Jamestown. And if you've never heard of Jamestown, it was the Jamestown, gosh, I can't do public history. I've told you that. Can't do public math, can't do public history. Captain John Smith and Sir Walter Raleigh, those are all the Jamestown. Anyway, so there's a recreational path that goes between those two places now, which is 50 miles long, which is perfect distance for an ultra. I'm just waiting for somebody to organize a race down there. If it's not me, maybe we'll do a fat ass or something. So my wife, who's a cyclist, was with a friend of hers, and they decided they were going to ride the Capitol Trail. And this, Capitol Trail's built as a safe recreational path that goes along Route 5 along the James River, which is where a lot of the old plantations are for this part of Eastern Virginia, Central Virginia. And would you believe she actually wrecked on the trail when somebody stepped in front of her? It was just, I worry about her riding these roads out here on her bike. And then here she is on a recreational path, which is built as, supposed to be safe because it's not the actual roadway. And then she ends up wrecking and she messed her knee all up. So, yeah, we're dealing with that. And I think she'll live, though. She did come home in one piece, and I think she's going to live. And she has a big trip planned where they're going to ride. She and some friends are going to ride from Richmond to Williamsburg, spend the night, and then come back the next day. So that'll be fun to kind of hear about that. Okay, so let me talk about this article, but I got to let my cat out first. Junior is meowing, and he wants to go out. Stand by. All right, took care of that. If you don't know who Junior is this cat that we have that is pretty cool. He thinks he's a dog. I'm not a cat person whatsoever, but I do like Junior. and that's his name. It's Junior, so it's kind of funny. All right, let me talk about this article. This is a Runner's World article from last week, and it's about Steve Jones, who is a marathoner, an awesome marathoner back in the 80s. And he set the world marathon record in 1984. And there's a reason you haven't heard of him, because he didn't really do well. He's obviously not running long, you know, world class times anymore. But he's arrogant, and I want to share some of what he said about basically people like me who like to run the marathon distance for fun and to compete against people in my age group, because race organizers set up events that I'm allowed to get in to pay money, and I can go down there and I can run the course and I can cover the distance and then I can get a finishing medal. And he seems to have a big problem with people like me. So we're going to talk a little bit about Steve Jones. I never met him. I'm just going to comment on his comments. I'm going to comment on his statement. He's 60 now. He lives and coaches in Boulder, Colorado. And he says, and this is him quoted, he says, "Mass participation has hurt the sport in my mind. Mass participation has hurt the sport in my mind. It's made a lot of people a lot of money. I have to be careful what I say because I get caught out on it sometimes, but I don't believe that starting and finishing a marathon makes you a marathoner. I don't believe that. If you're racing it to go as fast as you can, that's completely different than being part of an event and just wanting to get from point A to point B." So let's just talk about that for a second. So he seems to think that if you don't, you're only a marathoner if you race it as fast as you can and you do it like him, essentially. I mean, that's what he's saying. And then he talks about sports drinks, smartwatches, heart rate monitors, etc. Quote, "There's no easy way, and that's what all these gadgets try to show you, is some kind of easier way of training, but there isn't one. I ran without heart rate monitors, without sports cords, I don't know what that is, or yoga, or chiropractors, or physical therapists, or massage therapists. I'm a purist at heart. To me, it's about having your running shoes on your front doorstep and putting them on and going out and running hard. It's not about measuring how far you're running. It's not about checking your heart rate or drinking the right drinks and eating the right foods. All it's doing is teaching runners to run within their limits, so there's no ability to run to their pain threshold or several other thresholds. Distance running is all about stress and coping with stress. All these gadgets and gimmicks, they take the stress away from it. So when you're in a race and you don't have all the stuff in your arms or your pockets or your favorite drink, you don't know how to cope." Well, that's complete BS, Steve. So, God, you're arrogant, man. Let's see. This is what bothers him today. "The industry is huge, and the industry is running the sport now, not the sport running the industry. I really believe if you go back to my era, you had well-established marathons in the UK, and you get 200 runners. But they were all runners who were running hard and running fast times. Now you're lucky to get that many in a half marathon. The rest of the people just want to be a part of the event. I think it's great in many ways, but the competitive sport hasn't grown. The pinnacle hasn't gotten higher or sharper because of these events, and you would have thought of after all this time, it would have. But the focus has changed, and now there are absurd headlines, and I have to say you're just as guilty." He's talking about Runner's World publishing articles like 5 weeks to a faster 5K. Etc. "It's bullshit. It's just selling magazines, or just caters to people who are running 4 hours for a marathon or 25 minutes for a 5K. So when he says it caters to people who are running running 4 hours for a marathon or 25 minutes for a 5K, I feel like this guy is talking directly about people like me, because I'm a 4 hour marathoner, 4:17. And so, yeah, at one point in time I ran that, and that was my fastest one, which isn't bad for a 200-pound man. So, you know, I don't understand why this guy feels like all the rest of us aren't allowed to be a part of his experience. And, you know, I don't know, you know, I can't help, you know, the year I was born, man, and I can't help that these are the events that are set up, and I can't help that I'm interested in trying to see how far I can run in an organized event. I mean, yeah, I could go out on a Saturday morning with nobody watching and nobody giving a crap or anything and seeing how far I could go. But there's these events that create excitement and it's fun and you do it with your friends and yeah, it's an event and it's a race. And believe me, I'm not threatening you whatsoever about beating you. I mean, you don't have to worry about anybody like me. But here's the thing. You need people like me to pay my race fees so you can win money. And that's how it works. And that's how I think it works. I mean, that's my opinion. And so I get really ticked off by these elite purists that think the whole sport, marathon, should be about the way they think it should be because they're the fastest in the sport. I mean, think about it. For you to win, you need somebody to lose, and you need somebody to come in last place. There's always somebody that comes in last place, and that's where I come in. I mean, I'm a middle of the pack, back of the packer, and every event, every race has to have people that don't win, that don't come in first place. And so I just got a real problem when you have these people that want to be continue to be purists when it's never going to be that way at all. If you feel that strong about it, then you should have been advocating that way all along, spending all your money on it and getting sponsors to set up these events that are just elite events. I mean, if you look at Boston, you know, they all the elites all start out, you know, and that's the elite race, and then you have the masses, and that's just really I don't think it's hurt the sport whatsoever. I think it's made it exciting. Think about all the charities that have been helped with people that spend their money on these races, and some of the sometimes these organizers give money to charity. Otherwise, that wouldn't be there. And then he talks about these gadgets. First of all, I don't use a heart rate monitor. I don't even know what a sports cord is. I don't do yoga. I don't go to the chiropractor. I don't go to a physical therapist, and I don't go to a massage therapist. So he's putting all these people who don't run, you know, a 210, 220, or whatever the cutoff is for somebody like him. You know, so where do you cut it off then, dude? I mean, do you cut it off at 220? Do you cut it off at the 3-hour mark? You know, where is your cutoff for someone who you think is a marathoner? Why is it that, you know, what's wrong with 4 hours? What's wrong with 5 hours? I don't understand why he thinks he can be the one to cut that, to decide who gets to get in and who doesn't. I've always had a problem with people like that. I mean, anybody that's a winner needs to know that there's always going to be somebody that comes in last place and people that come all in between. And anyway, that's my little rant on that. That's all you got to do is Google Steve Jones Raw. Starting and finishing a marathon doesn't make you a marathoner. And so what does it make you? If you don't, you know, if you start at the starting line and you finish, and I cover the exact same distance as you do, in fact, if I run in the exact same race that you do, what makes you a marathoner and what makes me not a marathoner? Because it took me 2 hours longer, actually less than that. If I got faster, it'd be less than that. What? I don't understand why you think you can just cut that off. It just doesn't make much sense to me. And I've said before that these races need the people to pay their money that aren't going to win, so they can give prize money, good prize money to the. I don't know, the corporate sponsors give the money too, but all that money goes in to help the event, to attract the world class runners to the big events. Who's going to watch, you know, a race with 200 people in it? It's not going to be on TV. The corporate sponsors aren't going to be there, and that's what inspires the fastest runners now. That's just the way it is now, man. I mean, it's 2015. If you can't get on with that, then what you need to do is just watch your old videos. You know, that's what I say. All right. Well, that's enough ranting on that. I'll probably get some nasty emails from somebody on that. The email address is ashlanddave@gmail.com. Just so you know, I read all emails, but if they're negative, they get deleted. I don't talk about negative stuff from listeners on this show. And sometimes I just kind of get in a little rant, and I just had a problem with that. I don't know. If you've listened to the show before, you've heard me talk about stuff like that before. All right, let's get into the email bag section of the show. Got a couple to go over before we wrap things up. Heard from Dr. Smitty, a regular listener to the show, loyal and good friend. And it's good to see you up here, Greg. He writes, it's been 2 months since the Patrick Henry half. He's still not running. He took a month off, started back. All the pain came back. He went to the doctor, and he has got severe Achilles tendonitis with plantar fasciitis. So that sucks, Greg, man. Sorry. The doctor put him on a steroid dose. He didn't notice a big difference. And he's considering taking the rest of the year off to heal and start back up next year. he was going to go for the Umpstead 100 in April, and he said it's just not going to happen. So he's been going to the gym a lot, riding the bike, lifting weights, but it's no substitute for running. And I'll agree with you on this, Greg. It's amazing how much free time I have on weekends now that I'm not spending hours running. He's volunteering at some races, so he's still involved. Said not much else going on. He's been drinking some good beers with all the downtime. And one of his good friends is the head brewer at Back Bay Brewery in Virginia Beach. So they're going now for a big party. He's gained 10 pounds since he quit running, and it's all in his belly. So that's quite a sight, because Greg's the kind of guy that runs with no shirt on. Tall and slender is his physique. And anyway, he says, "Are you still running, Richmond? I almost want to come up there since my kids are to spectate since my kids are done with soccer. Plus, I could hit some breweries. Hope to hear a new podcast soon. Tell the family hello." Yeah, Greg, I'm running the Richmond half. I think I might have told you back at when I saw you. I'm not sure if I did, but I threw in the towel for. I just can't do the full thing, so I decided not to. So we are, anyway, I'll tell you more about that when I send you an email. Also here in, we're going to be meeting up with Sandy tomorrow night. She's coming to the center of the universe with her husband, Eric. We're going to be meeting up with her. Some of y'all might remember I ran the Blue Ridge Marathon with her a couple of years ago and had a great experience and just really enjoyed, running the marathon with somebody. We got split up a little bit during the race, but our goal was to run together and just have a good time. It was really cool. So we look forward to meeting up with her. We'll get some sound bites from that. I already mentioned that. Also, got an email from Richmond Roadrunners organization. Looks like I'm going to try to be another marathon tour guide this year for the Richmond course. Richmond's the friendliest marathon in the country. And so we do these charter bus. I'm not in Richmond Roadrunners Club anymore. I'm just kind of a Klingon. But I volunteered for the last couple of years hosting the course tour on the charter buses for people from out of town. And you get to meet some really interesting people, and I've really enjoyed doing that. So I'm going to do that again this year. Lots of history on the course, being that it's Richmond, Virginia. Heard from Richard Yarp out of the Woodlands, Texas. He said he hadn't written for a while, but he wanted to take a minute and drop a note to check in. Still listens. He finished up the July and August episodes, and he's going to do the September one. He said he liked hearing the old opening music. It was just like old times. He's been listening ever since I started the podcast, so that's why I like hearing from Richard. It's always good to hear. I started to hear about my friends that died, and then that Roddy had moved out of Richmond. And he said he's experienced the same problem with motivation and slowing down. He's going to do the Houston Half Marathon in January, and if the training goes well this fall, he can upgrade to the full marathon, but he's not really feeling like it, so we'll see how it goes, Richard, and it's always good to hear from you, and I really do appreciate you staying with the podcast and listening to me. I heard from Ashlyn Bob. He's listened to some of the old episodes from 2014, and he had a question about race bandits. He said he likes my position. Question, is the bandit who accepts the finisher's medal a thief? And I answered him when we ran together last weekend. My answer, I think he is a thief. I think somebody who does not pay for the race, comes in there with like a fake bib or even just bandits the race without a bib and crosses the finish line and somebody gives them a medal, because usually they have, kids giving out the medals, teens or whatever, some volunteer group. They're stealing the medal, but they're actually being given it. Somebody's giving it to them, so they're not actually stealing it from the person. So if the organization wanted to get the medal back, they'd actually technically have to sue them, because they didn't steal it. They, were given it. But morally, I think you're stealing, because you're stealing a service. And that's been my position from the beginning when I talked about race bandits. And that's back into, you can go to ashlanddave.podbean.com, listen to that episode if you're new. You can listen to what I think about race bandits, and the episode is called Race Bandits. I don't remember what episode it is. Let me see if I can go back to Bob here. It's just from May of 2014, but if you go to the website, ashlanddave.podbean.com, you can find that episode. Or just, you could go to Google and search Ashlyn Dave or Running in the Center of the Universe, and then Race Bandits, and I bet it comes up, because that's how it works, man. I heard from Down Under Dave, and he said he hadn't had a chance to write for a while. And he listened to the podcast, which is always good to hear. He said the Mississippi run sounds excellent. He looks forward to hearing about the training progresses. He is doing 4-hour and 3-hour back-to-backs aside from being buggered down all day. He's an older guy. He runs down in New Zealand, and he is always up to something, man. He's got, talking about, I can't ever read the names of the races, Tarawera 60K in Rotorua, New Zealand next February. He also found a 50K in Bushland near Melbourne, Australia, which is only a couple hours flight from the island of New Zealand. One of his daughters lives there, so he told his wife that they should just pop over to see her. And he's also thinking about entering a 6-day, 250K race in Nepal next year. Manaslu Trail Race. He said check it out on Google, so I'll have to do that. He said that's a whole different ball game, as they say. And he'll have to earn the biggest bunch of brownie points ever seen before he can even discuss that with his lovely wife. So, Dave, it's always nice to hear from you, and I really do appreciate I know I don't get back to you as often, as quick as I can, but I really do like reading your emails because you always got so many cool descriptions in there. And it's nice to know somebody from Down Under. So that's Down Under Dave. Thank you. I heard from Thomas Mueller. This was back in early September. Thomas, to get back to you so late. He did the High Country Half Marathon. It was kind of crazy because it's the same route that he rides out and back to get to the Blue Ridge Parkway down there in North Carolina. He think it was, the run was 9 miles up and 4 miles down. He ran 2:21, getting pretty slow. He said there's really, he's had some motivation issues. He and I have exchanged some emails about motivation and some of the issues with that. And he's finding some really serious fatigue. He measures his heart rate. And his max heart rate's 167, but he gets really serious fatigue at 100, and he doesn't think something's right. So he's heading out to the cardiologist, and I haven't heard back from him yet. Maybe if he listens to the podcast, he'll send me an email, tell me how he's doing. So Thomas, if you're listening to the podcast when this comes out, if you get a chance to send me an email at ashlanddave@gmail.com, I sure would appreciate finding out how you're doing. Heard from Ryan, and I think that might have been an old email. Ryan lives as a former member of Team Incognito from up in Canada, and he probably hates me now because I don't respond to his emails as quickly as I could. Ryan, I had some depression issues, man, when I was down and wasn't running, and if you just forgive me, I think everything will be fine. And then I had another email from Sandy. And I think what we're going to do is just catch up with her tomorrow night, because I've got a couple emails here that I feel so bad about that I didn't respond to. And when I see her tomorrow, we're going to get some sound bites from that. And I'll do a podcast about meeting up with Sandy, because this will be her first visit to the center of the universe. And that's a big deal if you've never been to the center of the universe. And if you're a new listener and for some weird reason you found this podcast for the first time ever, the reason this is called the center of the universe is because a former mayor of Ashland called it that one time when he gave a speech, and it stuck ever since. And that's been many years ago, and that's why Ashland, Virginia is called the center of the universe. So there you have it. All right, well, this is Ashland Dave, and I am running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish, keep on running, don't forget to hug your kids, and I'll be running the Richmond Half Marathon November 14th, so we'll see how that works out. And y'all have a good week. See you next time.